This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into the schlup date part. Who gets to make that joke is the question. And will it be lessened by the fact we've now said it a couple of times and it's... You know,
oh, the listeners are going to love it.
You reckon?
Yeah.
How many emails do you think you're going to get about it, or DMs?
I reckon more than we would get if we'd put in the listeners of prick stuff from last week.
Yeah. Well, we didn't put that in.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't actually listened to it back. Did we put it in?
No, I can't remember. I don't think.
I think I removed that bit. Mikey, it seemed a bit offensive.
Oh, Mikey.
You reckon a bit offensive? Did I go too far again? Yeah. Well, shame, you know, sometimes you just don't know, do you, when you judge these things? But fair enough.
Alexa, play Back of the Nest podcast.
Playing Back of the Nest, CPFC podcast from Amazon Music.
Back of the Nest, now on your Alexa device and Amazon Music.
Hello and welcome to Back of the Nest. It's the match report. I'm Chris Hambling and I'm joined today by Chris Clark and Cara Skipper. To look back at a fantastic Palace win, right? So, and then it says in the document to chat bollocks for a bit. So I think we'll do that, shall we? So, look, I know everybody's on tenterhooks from last week. And you're all after an update about the cat, aren't you? That's the thing. It's what you're here for. You're here for the cat-based updates. Well, I can tell you now that young Wesley the cat is in the same room as me. Currently staring me down. He yawned in my face just as I was talking. So that's the kind of contempt he's still showing for me. But, you know, the truth is, you know, what you said last week, Cara, about, you know, broadly accepting the hatred and then what producer Sam followed up with in our chat, which was to, you know, the way to their heart is always food. That really has worked a treat. And he's been quite an affectionate little chap. Current cat hates him, though. That's the next problem to overcome. So again, any suggestions on how to stop our current cat from beating up the new cat would be much appreciated.
You'll never stop that. That's just the way. That's your life now, Hambo, I'm afraid.
Is it?
Yeah, that's cat life. Welcome to it. You'll enjoy it over time.
Yeah, I feel like I've made a terrible mistake here.
No, it's just like any siblings, isn't it, really? I feel like, you know, until we all become adults, just fight. That's what sibling love is at a certain age.
It is true. And as a middle child, you know, I did my fair share of that. But, you know, I don't know. It feels like I made a very conscious decision in my life that I wasn't a massive fan of the responsibility of children. And now it feels like I have three furry children with two cats and a dog. I mean, the dog's downstairs having just attempted to bite the ankles of a house guest, you know. What can you do, eh? What have I done with my life? That's the question.
And, that is still better than if you had a child that attempted to bite the ankles of a house guest, though, I think. So I think you're still winning.
True. Talking about people who bit ankles as a child, Chris, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, some people might still call me an ankle biter, but because I'm not massive as a chap, at least not vertically. Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you. feeling pretty chipper after a good day yesterday. Managed to make it to the game, which is always nice, an achievement considering, you know, we had the difficulties, of course, of the industrial action taking place on the trains. Justified, as we all know, but at the same time, I know I met one chap who listens, a very nice guy called James, who said he'd had to travel all the way from Norwich. Supported the action, but had a difficult day, but made it and enjoyed it. So well done, James, and everyone who made it to the game yesterday, despite the difficulties. It was a good day, as we're going to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's, it's a good point. It does make things difficult. And I have to say, from my perspective as well, like, if you've already got a big challenge ahead of you in terms of, a variety of things going on, and then you have to deal with the transport issue and the increased traffic that generates and things like that, it did make it, frankly, impossible for me. So, these things happen. Obviously next time out, the next home game's Brentford on a Tuesday night, isn't it? So hopefully that one will be plain sailing in terms of getting to that, for sure. But it was a wonderful game. And, before we get into that, Carl, have you been up to anything exciting this week? Because, I've got some further excitement to come. But rather than talk just about myself in this intro, I was trying to see what else others had.
So you might remember from last week that I'd been on bridesmaid duties picking up my friend's wedding dress. So we are now a week out from the wedding, and it's in Austria. So I'll be flying off on Wednesday. I had a few bits to pick up. So I just, after watching the Palace women's game today, I had to nip into Bromley just and pick up some shoes and some other bits. Was there any things left on my list? But ended up seeing a dress that I liked more than the one that I currently have, and bought that, which has now thrown out everything else that I bought to go with the original dress, because they're two completely different colours. So yeah. I'm very happy with the new dress, but also caused myself quite a lot of stress for the next couple of days sorting that out. But
That's spectacular. And it sounds exactly like a conversation I pretty much have on a daily basis with my partner around. If I buy this thing, then I need these 12 things. Chris?
Well, talking of buying things, I mean, luckily I'm not in the position of needing to fit into a bridesmaid's dress or any other kind of dress, but I have recently bought a bread maker, and I've been playing around with that. Turns out that the amount of water you put in is really, really crucial, and I've just about got that right now, having had some disastrous attempts early on. So this morning's breakfast was eggy bread, made with the bread that I'd made, and I'm feeling pretty damn proud of that.
I'm really impressed, although you can sell someone's class by the when they say eggy bread and not French toast. I find one of the ways, it's basically like that things people say at Waitrose thing, isn't it? You can tell if someone shops at Waitrose or Lidl. Both of valuable stores, if they want to sponsor us, we're after a sponsor.
Surely with the old energy bills, nobody shops at Waitrose anymore.
There's an awkward situation here.
Do you shop at Waitrose, Ambo?
Yeah, and I work for an energy company. So anyway, let's move swiftly on that situation. By the way, I do want to get into this. I know we are pushed for time today, but I have to say, no one will ever find out, because it's not like this is a medium where we're broadcasting to loads of people, Cara.
We've also got at least half an hour left to talk about anything other than the game.
So honestly, right, your friend's wedding's in Austria. How do you feel about that?
Which aspect of it? I feel like this is a leading question, Hambo. Where are you trying to get?
I mean, that thing where let me give an example from my life. My friend Matt, his second wedding, his first wedding was local, and that was appreciated. His second wedding was in Vegas, which for somebody like me is a very, very expensive trip, due to certain personality failings. So. I always find that he's one of my best friends, so I absolutely had to go. I couldn't say no, but obviously I'm thinking I'm having to spend the best part of 1500 quid to get there and stay there, and then you've got spending money on top of that. So it's an imposition. You could have just got married down the road. I mean, it's your second go.
How long ago was this? How long have you held on to this bitterness for?
This was in 2018. Hey, they're lovely people. So you've got no ill will.
You're still mad about it.
Yeah, you've got no ill will whatsoever towards somebody, you know, making you be a bridesmaid at a wedding. So you have to go. But you have to go to Austria, right?
No, literally none. I'm really excited. Is that weird? I thought that was the normal response.
I am starting to believe you might be somebody who saves money and has budgets.
Oh, God, no. No.
Okay.
That might be why I'm not mad about it, because I just try not to think about it.
Oh, okay.
So just do it. Just enjoy it. And then if you have to worry about it, well, that'll come, won't it?
I thought it was more controversial than that, but you made me feel like it's just me. Chris, thoughts?
Well, that's what credit cards are for, isn't it? It's free money, right?
Mm.
So, yeah, someone gets married abroad, brilliant, extra holiday.
I feel like we need to bring Martin Lewis in here for that bit, Chris.
We do. Listen, I can provide some balance here. As somebody who's had to be on debt management plans three times in their life, that is not what credit cards are for. Just so there you go.
Have we got any clips of Martin Lewis we can drop in for that bit, just to make sure that we're not leading people astray?
I think we can try.
Maybe we could get sponsorship from a financial advisor.
That's what
I could do with it, at least. The freebies would be handy.
They know way too much about the value of money to sponsor this podcast. But talking of which, if you want to sponsor this podcast, anyway, it's well worth it. We're wonderful. Anyway, I think that's more than enough of the
chatting bollocks.
The chatting bollocks.
Well, I don't know, because didn't you go to a barbecue recently, Hambo?
I went to a restaurant to have Korean barbecue. Have you had Korean barbecue?
I have not, and I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that it's not particularly vegan friendly.
No.
I've had it. It's good.
Yeah, right. But what's the best thing, Chris, about Korean barbecue?
The dogs? Sorry.
I mean, we're going to have to edit that out. Jeez. I mean, I'm distancing myself from that.
Cannot ask Chris Clark a question like that and expect to get a sense of answer.
I can no longer mention the name of this place, even though the food that they serve was amazing. I can't possibly legally link them to what Chris has just said. So anyway, at this unnamed Reading-based Korean barbecue place, what I was saying, Chris, is the best thing about Korean barbecue is that the barbecue is built into your table. And you cook it yourself. If it's that not what you had, or you did?
Yeah, I did.
You just chose to go in that direction without answering.
I just couldn't resist the temptation.
I mean, some might question the acceptability of that. I mean, you know. What's your Twitter handle in case people want to discuss it?
At Chris Clark CPFC.
There you go. At Chris Clark CPFC.
The vegan's friend.
Clark, yeah. The views of Chris Clark are not the views of Back of the Nest podcast or any of their affiliates.
Just
he will be making a written apology on release of this pod.
Just to help out a little bit here, to move it on slightly, I'm still caught on, you went to a restaurant to cook your own food.
Uh-huh. And I mean, I suppose to their benefit, they didn't include the service charge. They strongly suggested you applied it, but, you know, I gave myself that tip, if I'm being brutally honest. But it's kind of, that's the kind of gimmick thing, right? But so you've got to think about the benefits of this. And I have to admit, I forgot about them. And having been to a Korean barbecue before, I forgot about this part. So when you order all your food, so you order your appetizers and then the different dishes for you to barbecue, obviously they don't have to cook it. So it all comes out all at once within about 3 minutes of you ordering it on loads of different plates. So what you're supposed to really do is, there were four of us around this table, and quite a lot of table space is taken up by the big circular barbecue in the middle of the table, right? So you're supposed to order a bit to cook and then see how you feel, and then order the next bit and then see how you feel, and like that, because it doesn't take long to cook. So it's just slices of meat. But we ordered everything in one go, so they had to bring a bunch of stalls over to balance things on and some trays and stuff like that, because we're just dumb people. But really good, really recommend it if you ever got the opportunity to do it. I was going to recommend the specific restaurant, but I don't want to now.
Did you have to do the washing up as well, or just the cooking?
I mean, obviously I had to do the washing up because I didn't have any money. So, but you know, that's just how I roll. No, it is, yeah, genuinely fun. You get some tongs, you know, and you get some scissors to cut the stuff that needs to be cut into slices. Now I think about it.
Hold on, they didn't even do the prep. You had to do the prep as well.
Some of the prep, yeah. I'm starting to think about it.
I think you've been out here, Humbo.
I think I might have been. Disturbing. Anyway,
you should name them now. Name and shame.
Yeah, the soju in Reading, it was. None of it tasted of dog, just to be clear. It was really, really nice. Absolutely top class. You know, quite pricey. They did some wonderful Korean drinks as well. They didn't have my favorite dish, which I always forget the name of, but it's like raw beef with a raw egg and slices of pear and loads of soy sauce. But whatever that's called, I like that. Shall we talk about some football? So, Cara, Palace women's game today. I didn't see the result, so I'm on tenterhooks. Hit me.
Well, I'll try not to hit you. But yes, we won 1-0. It was great. First game of the season. We were away to London City Lionesses, playing over in Prince's Park in Dartford. Expected it to be a tough game. It was a tough game in parts. London City Lionesses are going to be one of the teams pushing for promotion. So it was, as well as being kind of the first game of the season, it was a very early important result to get, I think, and was celebrated at the end in that fashion. You would have thought we were much further into the season with the celebrations that went on at the end. But the first 20 minutes, I'd say London City Lionesses had the kind of run of the game. They were really strong physically. I think we were kind of bouncing off them a little bit. But then we seemed to kind of settle and get the ball down and play our game a little bit more for the rest of the first half. Really nerve-wracking final 5 minutes of the first half where they were hitting shots from all over the place. But we managed to survive that. Came out absolutely on fire in the second half and soon got a goal. Izzy Sibley with the goal, following up a great strike from Chloe Arthur that was saved. And we were pushing for a second for sure, just didn't quite come. Managed to get kind of much better luck getting in behind the defence. So some really, really positive stuff to see happening for the first game. Especially bearing in mind that only four of our starting players today were with Palace last season. The rest were all brand new players, and you would not have known it from watching that team that it was, you know, a brand new team of people who played all over the place up until now. So yeah, it was great. I definitely my like individual favourite player to keep an eye on from the new people who've joined is Polly Doran, who's joined us over from Melbourne Victory, over from Australia. And she was absolutely great. She got brought off, I don't know, about 75 minutes maybe. And we had to kind of get used to her not being on the field because she was really, really effective up until that point. And she did look like she'd taken a bit of a knock. So I'm hoping that's something that's not going to be sticking around because obviously we face Coventry at home next Saturday, 27th, 7 p.m. Just getting that in there to make sure that as many of you guys go down as possible.
On that, how well attended was it? You know, that I noticed there was a bit of stuff going on in the back of the Nest WhatsApp group talking about it. I'm just really interested to see the impact of obviously the successful England women's team campaign and you know, just that level of enthusiasm growing. What was it like?
It was good. I missed the first couple of minutes of the match actually, because when I've been to Prince's Park once before, my cousin plays for Aldershot Academy and went to see one of his games there. And I thought, oh yeah, parking's not an issue. I'll be absolutely grand. Turned up and I had to park about two roads along because every single parking space in the car park was full and roads were absolutely jam-packed, just packed with cars. And what was nice was that the majority of fans there were Palace fans, loads. And it was a real, when I went last season, I only went to home games and it was mostly families, but there were quite a lot of like groups of, people in their 20s, 30s who were there as like groups of friends, as well as the families, quite a lot of the kind of players' families and stuff. And Palace just dominated the stands really, which was lovely, lovely to see. And so hopefully go into the home game on Saturday, that'll be an excuse for a lot more people to get down. I think it really does make a difference to the buzz of the game.
Excellent. Well, hopefully more success to come. Like you say, obviously they're a fancied team, so to beat them first game of the season really does feel like a really strong step in that direction. And we've seen before, you know, if you've got the right manager in place and the right coaching staff and the right philosophies, you know, you can cope with changing a team massively. And in particular, moving on to the Palace game soon, you can deal with a team being split in pre-season as well if you've got a decent coaching setup and the right people in place. But we'll come to that in a little bit, because just to touch on what the academy have been up to, the under-18s got their first win of the season. Really impressive 4-0 victory away to Villa. Two goals from Junior Dixon and one each from Adler Nascimento and Joe Gibbard, dominant display, never really in any doubt after that. A first half when three of those goals went in with just a single in the second half. But strong performance, clean sheet, can't ask for more than that. And yeah, big upheaval in that team, obviously, with a lot of the players, particularly from last year, but a lot of players playing up a bit in the 23s. And just a lot of new names, a lot of integration of others. It's really good to see that momentum still there. 23s, really impressive start to the season. But you know, pegged back a little bit by Fulham this time. It was a 2-2 draw. Fulham were 2-0 up. But Palace came back really well, and it was John Kamani Gordon who scored both goals. Really strong finishes as well. You know, one early in the second half and one as the game was sort of winding down to the last 10 minutes or so, both from similar positions in the box. Finished them into the bottom left corner both times. And he was a real handful in that game. And you know, started to really come good. He's had a little bit of sort of a taste of the first team environment a while back, and sort of drifted away again and hadn't heard too much more from him. A couple of injuries, I think, but starting to look like a real menace, and like he's kicking on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the course of this season with him, because he's amongst the goals already. See how far he can get. But we really have to talk about the Liverpool game. We have to talk about the Aston Villa game. The Liverpool game was last week. What a game. I will talk with some degree of jealousy with both Chris and Cara about what was what felt from unfortunately having to watch it from home was one of the all-time, not necessarily all-time great, but a great Selhurst atmosphere for sure. It really got loud. It was rocking. The large parts of the stadium were really enthused. I know from my brother-in-law was there, as well as a large number of the people from back of the nest and various other people and friends who are obviously Palace fans and go to the games. All of them kind of left that game just absolutely buzzing, not just because of the result. You know, result's always good, but because the team is playing better than they ever imagined. Because we try to be realistic, you know, we look at the start of the season in terms of the fixtures, we look at the upheaval, the fact that the pre-season was so disjointed, and we try and be realistic about how it's going to take us a while to be good. We thought the same things last year, but in the third game to produce a performance like that, and I know Villa haven't started the season great, and you know, arguably they should be doing better than they are, but we just didn't give them a second. And I think I counted maybe 2 minutes in that whole game, probably a bit more than that if I'm being fair. But, you know, in my mind, it was about 2 minutes where you could call Villa the better side, and you know, 88 plus injury time for Palace being the better side. And it was just so impressive. It was dominant. We dominated possession. We dominated chances. The 1v1s we dominated. There's just in every conceivable way, we were far, far better than Villa. And it was nice to see another manager showing a distinct lack of grace and talking about the fact that they could have got a result and that fact, you know, sort of hinting that they were unlucky when it's just utter bollocks. They were terrible and we were so much better. The style, the swagger, the fact we could have had so many more goals. I absolutely loved it. Fair summary, was that? I'll start with you, actually, Chris, because you're first on my list.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair summary. I mean, it was a very fulfilling experience to be there.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ultimately, I mean, the stats, I've looked back subsequently and the stats tell a different story. They make it look like it was a far closer game than in truth it felt. You know, obviously we'll talk about the action of the game, but the reality was that, as you say, Hambo, you know, we conceded early. But after that, we didn't look like losing it. In fact, you know, it felt very comfortably like we, you know, deserved to win and, you know, were likely to win. So yeah, really satisfied, banging atmosphere. You know, there was nothing to moan about. And there you go. That's unusual at Selhurst. Even when the team is playing well, there's usually people around you bellowing and angry and frustrated about something. Even the faces that I'm used to seeing doing that weren't doing that. One of them did a little dance at one stage during the game. It was quite late on, but yeah, it was a special day to be there. Looking forward to, you know, seeing you at the ground very soon, Hambo. Bring it on.
Yes, certainly there for the Brentford game without any shadow of a doubt. Yeah, just a last minute thing for me, unfortunately. But I mean, Cara, anything to add to that? You know, there was nothing to moan about. I mean, in the interest of balance, we're going to try and find some things to comment on that we might be able to improve. You know, look at some player performances, things like that. But in general, you know, anything to add, anything to disagree with there?
Just picking up on your point, Hambo, for sure what you saw from a distance was what it felt like. It just felt from the beginning like a bit of a party atmosphere, to be honest. And I think, like, sometimes the weather plays into that, doesn't it? Like a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff that we all live for, where it feels like we haven't had loads of those towards the end of last season and so far this season. So yeah, it was just great. It was a real buzz. And even though we obviously conceded first, it didn't really dampen spirits, I don't think. Chris Clark might disagree with me if I got that wrong, but it just felt like the crowd kicked into action more and was like, all right, yeah, we've got a job to do to make sure we lift the team and play our part. Everyone just seemed quite positive from the beginning and then obviously at the end as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think the players definitely responded to the crowd, and it's worth kind of noting as well that, yeah, obviously the opening game to the season was a home game, and as you do, you know, as you'd expect, the Palace crowd was committed, loud, supportive in that game as well. But I just felt like this was a level above that. And, you know, you think about the newer players in the squad, and somebody like Decore brings to mind who, you know, hadn't experienced that intensity. He'd had that first game, that little taste of it. But hearing that go up a level, you know, I think that's the sort of thing that would have, you know, just sort of carried him through and as he's sort of trying to get up to the pace of the league. And it was, well, a spoiler for what I was going to say later. He's one of probably his best game in a Palace shirt already. He looked, you know, looked like the player that everyone talked about when we signed. He's always looked good, but he looked, you know, like he's been playing in that midfield for, you know, 3-4 seasons against Villa. It was just so assured and so comfortable and confident. And it kind of just leads through into the team when the crowd are like that, when, you know, they're you know, very much against the you know, the negativity of Villa, because they had some very negative tactics and they had rotational fouling, which we'll talk about later. But when the crowd are in the official's face about that, you know, it just gives them that extra push to you know, to take that and use it against Villa. And, you know, if they'd continued to play the way they did in those opening few minutes and focused on the football and pressing us high, you know, they might have got something out of that game, because, you know, we had to probably make a shift around, you know, sort of early in the game to kind of deal with that. It was noticeable that we moved to kind of stop the overlap from the fullbacks about midway through the first half. There was a kind of acknowledgement that we were getting exposed both sides if we weren't careful. You know, one pass could kind of cut out half of our team, and we just shifted things slightly in terms of the positioning. So it was, you know, it was a fantastic game, and Villa have got no one to blame but themselves. However, you know, the Palace crowd made a massive, massive difference. But look, there was a change in the lineup. It was interesting to see. I thought we would go back to a back four. I think that's our plan A against the majority of the league. You know, we're not going to show the level of respect we showed to Liverpool in changing our system to everybody. Maybe we'll see it, you know, at the Man City game next weekend. But, you know, the back four was expected. I'm not necessarily saying, Cara, that the change for Wardy in for Klein was expected. What did you think?
That was a bit of a surprise, I think. Although it didn't seem to go massively badly. I guess it's just shifting from that five, like reducing that five at the back down. I guess you want to have someone who you know you can most of the time rely on, that isn't going to worry too much about pressing really far forward, but is just going to do their job at the back. Like that's all I can really offer on that one. I think I wasn't necessarily worried about it, but yeah, I would agree with you that it was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, again, I talked about Ward last week, and you know, I really try very hard not to suggest that I don't think he's worth a place in a Premier League team at all. But you know, he's certainly one of the people I tend to pinpoint, and I would say the same about Klein to a point. You know, he's one of the people that I look at and see. You know, we need to think certainly how we upgrade that area. That's definitely one point. But you know, you can, I suppose, almost flip a coin between the two. But for me, like, you know, form wise, a lot of people are pointing out to us last week, you know, form wise, Klein had been really good for quite a while. So the fact he was left on the bench for Ward was a shock. But you know, there would have been both a tactical reason for it and indeed a performance reason for it, I'm sure. Chris?
Well, Ward's one of those players like James McArthur who, you know, perhaps looks tired at times, like at the start of games, but still looks the same degree of tired at the end of the game, i.e., you know, he's actually got a phenomenal amount of endurance. And we've been talking on, you know, ever since I came on to this podcast, and indeed before when I was listening to it was being talked about, was when we were going to upgrade from Wardy. And, you know, I mean, he's reaching the later stages of his career, and it feels like, you know, maybe he'll reach retirement without us ever having found an upgrade. You know, that's where it seems to me. So I was, you know, unsurprised to see him come back into the starting 11. And I think, you know, when that does start to become a more regular transition, it will be, you know, consensually and on his terms. Seems that way to me. I think he's, you know, first name on the team sheet. But then equally, I'm not upset when Klein starts. I think they're both good, solid right backs of a certain age. And, you know, I'm absolutely comfortable with either of them starting.
I think it's also, like, I think we're really used to having only one best player in the squad for each position, and any change is seen as, oh, what's gone wrong? Why does that change have to come into play? But I think what we've seen with Vieira so far is that that's not really how he wants the squad to operate. And that's also probably, if we're thinking of, like, how far can we push it this season, it's probably not how a team that wants to push on in the league can operate as well. Like, we're maybe just moving into a time where there isn't just one best player for each position, but we are just going to see more and more of this rotation. And hopefully that gets us through the season better. Hopefully it allows us to push on at parts of the season we've struggled with before because of injury and whatever. So I just wonder whether it's a bit of a change in the way that we look at selections being made for Palace. It isn't always going to be who's on best form, but like who's best for this game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's kind of the, You're right. That is a change for us. We haven't really been there before. And we do get stuck talking about best 11s and things like that. And you're right. It should change game to game. And, you know, I suppose with good reason for quite some time, we were used to seeing people who did select the same, pretty much the same 11 if they could, no matter what. And you're right. We have a better squad than that now. It's starting to get attention from elsewhere in the football world. There's, you know, you see a lot of things on social media from fans in general who are saying, you know, wow, Palace have really started to build something impressive there. And there's a bit of jealousy coming our way, which, you know, you always worry that little bit about. As soon as we get, you know, that little bit cocky about what we have, we tend to fall apart. You know, I can remember that wonderful start to a season we had under Pardew, and everyone got really cocky, started talking about Europe, and then we absolutely fell to pieces. So fingers crossed that doesn't happen this year. But, you know, you look at the squad we've got, you're quite right. And, you know, when we're talking about the right-back position and picking between Joel Ward and Nathaniel Clyne, absolutely you could be picking between options that were far, far worse than either of them. But I don't think it should stop us looking at our team and saying, you know, this player is good, they've served us really well, but we do have to upgrade. And it's interesting picking up on Chris's point there, because the only time Ward really did lose his place was, of course, Aaron Wan-Bissaka coming in and taking that, and Ward had to be patient. And frankly, it was only because Wan-Bissaka left that Ward got back in that side and has gone on to play even more games, even more of a level than I thought he was capable of. I think he's been fantastic for us. And I think it's 10 years now, isn't it, this year? So wonderful, wonderful player for us, wonderful servant for the club. But you have to be brutal and say we still need to probably do something better there. And I always bring it up because, you know, when I look at the team and I look at the way we're starting to play football now and how it flows, you can't help but be drawn to the areas where it doesn't quite flow. I know we got some listener comments on this coming up in a bit, so I'll probably, come back to it then. But broadly speaking, if you look at what we have down the right-hand side, at the moment, what we're choosing to select, who we're choosing to play, who we have as options, we don't quite have that same flow as we see down the left quite a lot. And when you see certain players doing a wonderful job, but they're intent, let's take Wardy right back. Invariably, he has kind of two modes when the ball comes to him on the right hand side, and that's a pass down the line, usually high in the air, or he has a pass back to a centre back. Whereas you don't really ever see him bomb on, kick the ball down the flank, go on the overlap, that kind of stuff. That sort of thing is missing from the game. And that's fine if you build your team around to do that. It's not a weakness as such, but it's a limit of options. And I think we could be watching an even better team if we're able to find an upgrade in there. But let's move on from that. I think Edouard came back into the team and we talked about him last week. So we do have to talk a little bit about his performance this week. And again, I suppose I'll start with you, Chris. It's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, my perspective, talking with Patrick last week as well as Cara, I really want him to do well and I don't want to be writing a player off at all. And my gut says we've got to give him a run of games. We have to give him 10 games playing as a centre forward before we can judge him. But that, on that performance, he got a great assist early on, technically assist for Wilf early on, got the assist for the disallowed goal, which we'll talk about. You know, generally put an awful lot of effort in, but there were some missed opportunities, some poor hold-up play. And, you know, generally speaking, you know, even the commentators of the game were talking about that's the thing that's missing from Palace. We thought we were getting this clinical striker, but he's not it right now. So how many games do we give him? How much of a chance does he get?
Well, before and after the game, I was saying he needs a run of at least 6 starts to give him a fair crack of the whip. I think everything that you've said there, Chris, I agree with, frankly, and that makes for a really quite dull podcast, so I'll also say some extra points.
Sorry, you're going to disagree with me on the next bit, it's fine.
Can't yeah, absolutely. I mean, on this, so the basically, I mean, as you say, Edouard, he had some good touches in terms of passing the ball to other people, especially the Jeff Schlupp goal that wasn't. But when he got chances himself, he failed to put them away repeatedly. And the contrast couldn't have been clearer when Mateta came on and had one chance and scored immediately. Now, the flip side of that, if you're being generous, is to point out, and I think Cara's made this point in a way earlier, which is football is no longer an 11-person game. You know, you don't, your starting 11 is not necessarily your best 11. That is not the point. You start players to do a role, and then at a different phase in the game, you bring on other players to do a different role. And perhaps that Mateta goal wouldn't have happened. Maybe the defence, the Villa defence might have been less tired if they hadn't been under pressure from Edouard and from Eze and from Zaha in the way that they had been. So it's really difficult to detach the individual from the fact of what was ultimately a very good team performance. We do need to show some patience. I'd give him at least another 4 Premier League starts, and then let's see. By then, I reckon he'll have opened his account and started to come good. Mm. And they're still different tools with different jobs. Ultimately, you know, Mateta's that very much that finisher, whereas I think for the link-up play, Edouard has his place. I still like seeing him cut in from the wing in particular. So I think he has his place in a front three, whether it's, you know, the target man, number 9 role, I'm not so sure. But, you know, we need to give him the chance to demonstrate whether it is or not.
I mean, you made the point there that you know, and the way you talked about Mateta getting that goal coming off the bench, in part because of the work that Edouard had done in occupying a defence and working them hard and, yeah, providing that movement and that energy up top. You're quite right. And a lot of people kind of, you know, we had that discussion about Benteke before. Benteke would do 70 minutes of graft, you know, and then somebody else would come on and everyone would be like, oh, why doesn't that guy start? He made so much more of an impact than Benteke. But you're like, it's a different thing. It's a different skill. It's a different, you know, approach to a game. The game itself changes throughout the course of a match. So it's, you can't really judge things like that. So, you know, you look at Mateta coming off the bench, scoring with what he's, I don't think it was his first touch, maybe his second touch. And he looked so full of energy. But, you know, the last couple of games he started, not so much. Not, you know, and he has to keep being pushed and he has to keep proving himself. And he's, you know, he's not a 20-goal-a-season striker either. And it's like, yeah, it's a really tough one. But, you know, you're quite right. It's about using the squad the best we can. And if Edouard for 70 minutes and then Mateta off the bench gets us the goal, then that's a good way of doing it.
And we've already seen that that Edouard can do that impact role as well, because his debut was, of course, coming on, and I think that was his first touch that he scored one of 2 goals against Spurs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it may well be actually that's his role, is coming in as the clinical striker for 20 minutes at the end. But, you know, who knows? Let's give him some time to start and see how it works out.
It's a shame he didn't keep that goals per minute rate up, to be honest with you, because I think he'd have scored several hundred goals by now if he'd done that. And so, frankly, it's a travesty.
Here we come.
Yeah, yeah. But next up, Chris, I asked you that question, so I'm going to ask Cara this one. Unlucky, we can't talk about it. So we talked about Jeffrey Schlupp last week.
Oh, right? No, don't make me do Schluppy again.
No, I'm kidding. Like, I honestly, it's not going to go the way that you might expect. I just, you know, obviously, again, a player I talk about a lot, and I always feel like it's important that I do, so people know that I'm not, you know, these aren't things I say just for the sake of it. You know, I hold the opinions I hold. I'm prepared to discuss them and debate them and all that kind of stuff. But what I thought was interesting throughout the course of the week, and I know DR picked it up, you know, for talk on both his, you know, his socials and on the YouTube account, because it was the most statistically similar player to Gallagher, you know, when we're looking for a Gallagher replacement in the entire Premier League. Statistically, that is Jeffrey Schlupp, which I found very amusing, because it both highlights that statistics aren't, don't quite tell the full story, but it also shows that in the stuff that you don't really think about and the stuff that doesn't really get the attention, you know, Jeffrey Schlupp does actually deliver pretty much the exact same thing that Conor Gallagher delivers. So for me, it actually gives me that opportunity to highlight what I think, you know, why I have such a hard time with Jeffrey Schlupp. And, you know, in this game, I felt a little sorry for him because, look, he's playing in a deeper role. He's actually playing it really well. He's, you know, he's doing a really good job. I still hold a very strong belief that, you know, if we have the ambitions that we have, we need to have a better option than starting Jeffrey Schlupp in central midfield. And that's not supposed to be disrespectful. It's just a getting us another thing of like the Ward-Klein situation where I think we have to look for more natural, better players in those positions. But you have to respect the job that he does. And I think it didn't help early on when he missed the header for me because, I mean, you can see by his face and his reaction, you get a completely free header in the penalty area in the Premier League. As and a player with that ability that he has, and you know, he's scored headers before, to mistime that header that badly was inexplicable. So he'd rubbed me up the wrong way a little bit. And then, as you know from baiting me during the game, Cara, on on the back of the Nest WhatsApp chat, when he put the goal away, I was like, you would you send me the eyes or something?
Yeah, the eyes.
My response was not as measured as it is on the podcast, should we say. I'm going to give you the version of my response that I would like to put across, which was, you know, that's the first thing he's really done right all game, was basically what I said. Wasn't it right? It was roughly it.
Yeah, if you put it through Google Translate in about 5 different languages, that might be what you get out at the end.
Yeah, absolutely, right? So, yeah, and you know, it was a shame it was disallowed. But, you know, in all honesty, I just wanted to acknowledge that the job he's doing in there is extremely important right now. We don't have that many other options. I personally would still 100% put Will Hughes in there. And I enjoyed the little cameo that Hughes had. And he was doing a thing that I think I would just like to see Schlupp do more. And that is, you know, back himself with the ball at his feet. Play that forward pass with a bit more assurance. And just run with the ball. Decore does it, runs with the ball. You know, doesn't really give it away and just he's prepared to, if there's a gap, he'll run into it. Whereas Jeffrey Schlupp is always looking to just to move the ball on. And there's a real value in that. But when you have the ability that he has on the ball, and the pace that he has, and the creativity that he has, he plays within himself so much. And I find it really hard to watch at times. So that was my point as an update to last week. Chris, thoughts?
What a player. What a player, King Jeff. Delighted to see him slot that chance away. Outraged, and we'll obviously talk about the reasons.
Well, inverted commas. Go into that after this bizarre soliloquy.
We'll come on to the so-called reasons. But you know, I mean, again, you know, he cemented his reputation. They even talked about it on the highlight commentary about, you know, he may not score huge numbers of goals, but when he does, they're important ones. That was one that started to signal the turning point in that match for me. Yes, we, you know, had a period of dominance, but in a way, I think it also reflects, and I will acknowledge that while my lionization of this player is, you know, part the enjoyment of the fact that you don't lionize him in quite the same way as me, you know, he's become a hero to me. But that song, which expresses the act of the tune of the Akadu song, and I won't go into all the words, but it talks about how he doesn't get everything right, but he is keeping Palace up. I mean, that's no longer the level of our aspiration, of course. But the point is, you know, it's the a curate's egg, a mixed level of performance. That header was not as good as the finish that we saw later on, but we know that he can do that. And I understand the frustration sometimes when he doesn't. I again would say, same as what we've just said about Edouard and Mateta, you know, Hughes came on to the pitch late on when other players were tired. If Hughes starts and we see Jeff Schlupp come on with 15 minutes to go, he is a fast player. And I can see him scoring some sucker punch goals, putting those chances away. I'm definitely not in the camp of any kind of camp that would say that Will Hughes shouldn't play. I like Will Hughes as well. I'm just a big fan of King Jeff, and you know, long may he reign.
Yeah. Look, I'm just going to leave it at this. I was watching the game with my partner, and she kept looking at me and saying, "Why do you hate Jeffrey Schlupp so much?" Because she has him in her fantasy league team to annoy me. And I was like, "I don't hate him." And I said, "Look, you know, this is what I'd say." I said, "Look, He may not score very many goals. He may not play forward passes too much. He may lose track of players, you know, in defensive positions on more regular occasions than others. He may not make forward, decisive forward runs on a regular basis. And then I just stop because I think it's funny to not finish with an actual point and just say all those things.
To be fair, that is quite funny.
It's quite an amusing thing to do, isn't it? I've done it probably three times to her now. She's stopped liking it.
Chris, I was just going to leave you in absolute silence there just to see how long you'd sit there in silence after that punchline, Humber.
If I could just say, I mean, on this debate, it's clearly going to be one that continues. So, you know, if you're Team Chris on this or if you're Team Chris on this, come back to Back of the Nest for future shot mates.
Let's do a poll.
If you're with me, hashtag Team Chris. If you're with Chris, hashtag Team Chris. Let's see what happens.
It's going to be a landslide one way or another.
I just want to see it. I just want to see that debate. So to get in contact, you can, you know, on Twitter, on Instagram, on there's TikTok apparently. I deleted the app, but we're on there. And all the other things. Email if you're that way inclined. If you're like me and you're at the forefront of technological advances and you want to be on email, get yourself on email. Sign up with an AOL account and message us. On the information superhighway.
You could always drop some feedback forms into your local Waitrose for Hambo to pick up as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm always visiting a Waitrose, so I'll pick those up. Mean. Right. I don't think we can get too far into goal analysis. We've already been talking way longer than I intended, and it's mostly my fault. So, look, let's just – obviously, we could have done better with a goal. We conceded. It was a long ball over the top. Chris reminded me it was Gay who got caught under it. I couldn't quite remember if it was Anderson or Gay because I haven't had a chance to watch highlights back. But, you know, bottom line, it was something we shouldn't really have got caught out by. But credit to the team and particular credit to Wilfried Zaha because we didn't let it get to us. We got ourselves back into our rhythm. We played to our game plan and, you know, Wilf's first goal was just excellent. You know, it was as good a finish as the finish against Liverpool. He looks really clinical in that position now. And let's just talk, you know, as quick as we can, because, you know, we've talked about Wilf and his brilliance a lot, I guess. But, you know, he's I'd say probably at the peak of his powers right now, Cara, would you agree?
Absolutely. And I think a huge part of that, I was going to say most, but maybe not most, but the huge part of that is down to what we were discussing last week and that Patrick pointed out is just how happy he seems to be. And I think not just Wilf, but I think we're seeing last season, we saw a lot of kind of individual performances that maybe weren't quite linking up as a team until later on. And this season, I think what we've started to see is like absolutely brilliant individual performances, but all playing into the same exactly the roles that they've been asked to play and playing into the team performance. And Wilf is absolutely leading from the front on that. He just has so much confidence. He feels like he's got obviously I don't know this because I don't talk to him, but it looks like he feels like he's got the backing of the manager, the team, the fans, like everyone's behind him. And that's just coming out in the kind of creativity and confidence that we're seeing him execute every week.
Absolutely right. And, you know, it's another two goals for him, Chris. The second goal, of course, was a penalty. Did you have some degree of sympathy obviously not in terms with your Palace hat on, but in a general sense, if it wasn't a Steven Gerrard managed team and it wasn't the horrible people at Villa, when you look at a penalty being given like that and you think up the other end, I might not be too happy with that because, you know, he's jumped. And when you jump, you don't jump with your arms by your side. You jump with them out as a lever. You know, and it's very close to him. But, you know, the referees had a look. They've said it's in an unnatural position and we get the penalty. So, you know, what were your thoughts?
Well, I'm famously unbiased on
these things. Yes, that's true. That's true.
But I'm actually obviously not remotely unbiased. What I am is consistent in generally taking a view that when officials have a chance to get a decision wrong and to make it in a way that doesn't favour Palace, they will take that opportunity. Immensely frustrating when it's given against us. In this case, I mean, it is unfair, but that's the way that the rules work, and it would get given against us. In this case, it got given against them. I didn't see, you couldn't really see that incident from our angle. I thought it was just a straightforward, corner to us or goal kick situation, probably a corner to us. And then, slowly the ripple came around the ground of, they're reviewing something. And we had no idea what it was at first. And then, it came up handball. People were looking on their phones. There was stuff on the screen. It's got better, I will say, since the experience of VAR and what a farce it was at first. It's now done at least reasonably efficiently. I'd be annoyed if it was given against my team. But, these things are done, frankly, relatively consistently now, which is, we all know that if you jump and your arm is even half out and the ball hits it, and that it definitely was ball to hand, it wasn't even a hand, it was an arm, ball to arm, it gets given. And that's what happens. As long as it's consistent, I don't mind, even though it does feel a bit unfair, as you say.
Yeah, I think, we won't talk about it for very long as well, because I know a lot of people saw the lines being drawn for the offside decision against Edouard when Schlupp took the ball away. And you look at that and everybody knows that's not offside. No one would call that offside. No defender would appeal for that being offside because, the feet are basically behind the bodies. Generally, if you consider an average position, if you like, they're basically level and no one really cares. No one would think that's worth giving offside for. There's no advantage being gained in any way there. The ball was going straight to him. So it just seems an absolute travesty that we're even having a discussion about that being an offside when no one was appealing for it. No one wanted it. And it's a completely unjust way of disallowing a goal and a complete waste of a decision. It's a waste of VAR. And then you look at this one and you're like, this is, again, technology being used so something is arguably factually correct. So it's arguably factually correct to disallow the goal that Jeffrey Schlupp scored, and it's arguably factually correct to give the decision for handball against Lucas Digne. But neither of those things felt right to me, and that's why VAR doesn't get the backing it deserves. But I did enjoy the fact that, was it Villa were singing about VAR, weren't they, when the goal got disallowed? And then later on, they faced the full wrath of VAR, which amused me.
Just to make it balanced, sorry, the chants of fuck VAR were ringing out from the Palace end, and myself and Chris Clark's girlfriend added on a little "unless it helps" caveat into the chant, which we found really amusing at the time, and then found it even more amusing when we got to sing it when it did really help us getting that penalty.
Well, not only is that validation, but you can take full credit for it, I believe. That's how works. Excellent stuff. Steve Sheffield, actually, talking about the penalty decision, said, "How funny was it that Wilf managed to piss Martinez off with a look just after scoring his second goal? Shithousery of the highest order." Really enjoyed that. If you didn't see it, it was really great to see. Just gave him a look. Nothing said. Just glared at him because, first of all, I guess he dared save the penalty. There'd obviously been some reaction there. To his credit, went back and apologised to him later, which is an example of the new mature Wilf. And I did want to make what reference to one other example of that, which was early on in the game, Wilf was taken out a few times, obviously by a few players, rotational fouling going on a lot. But Wilf under Vieira, he seems to have found this, with the support of a player, a former player of that magnitude, a manager who gets him and builds a team around him to some degree. Wilf seems to be able to better channel himself. And there was no better example that I've seen of when Matty Cash had just absolutely hacked him down and the ref had given him a final warning. And Wilf you could see him just saying to the ref, like, "How is that not a yellow card?" And the ref has explained himself and Wilf just sort of does a really obvious kind of, fine. Like, Now we'll see what's going to happen kind of reaction. Like, you've made me angry, now see what you're going to get. And from that moment, he was already terrorizing, but from that moment, the focus was absolutely incredible. And he took it so, like, it was like his personal mission to show their defense up time and time again. And that was it. You know, that was, if there was a moment that they, the Villa kind of secured the defeat for themselves, it was that, you know, third or fourth terrible challenge in a row by Cash that just got Wilf absolutely focused and on his game and just did us a huge favour. So I really wanted to draw attention to that and, you know, applaud Wilf once more for something so fantastic. And, you know, we're so lucky to have him, at, you know, the 29-year-old Wilf playing in our side, because he's one of the best players in the division, in my view. So look, Mateta got the third, great finish, and obviously quick nod towards Mitchell for his cross. And I also want to say, you know, Tyreek had a difficult end to last season. And even, I'd say, in the Arsenal game, he had a bit of a torrid time in that. But, you know, both the Liverpool game and this game against Villa, you know, the focus, the one-on-one defending was really top quality. I was really, really happy to see it. And the cross, he's capable of that level of delivery, which was phenomenal. And that's, again, it's a big reason Mateta's got the goal, is the quality of delivery. He gets himself in the box. We know he's going to be there, but he couldn't really do much else other than finish that. It was just a beautiful delivery. So credit to Tyreek. Oh, there's so much I'd want to talk about. So you get one opportunity to talk about a player of note. You could pick one of the two I've mentioned. Kara, I'll start with you. You can either go with Ezu, as we're now saying. I put too many R's, that's why I pronounced it like that. But Ezu, or you could go with Decore, or performance of note of your choice.
Sorry, I'm going to go Mateta. No, I mean, I could do either of those, but I just absolutely, absolutely love Mateta so much. And Chris Clark mentioned it earlier on, but to just be able to come on, and it kind of ties a little bit into what we were saying about Edouard. You know, I feel like Mateta's really got the hang of the fact that he's probably not going to be playing 90 minutes every single week. So, you know, how does he manage to keep his confidence such that he can come on and do the job that he needs to do without necessarily, you know, having that team built around him or whatever. And I just love how much fun he has. I love how much he interacts with the crowd. I think just going off the back of what a good feel that game was, that player for me just encapsulates what a player, how a player can really endear themselves to fans, even if they're not kind of top scorer or playing every minute of every game. And it's just an excitement when he comes on, and just a joy to watch. And this game was just perfect for him.
Fantastic stuff, Chris. Well, you get to pick one of those two or a player of your choice. And you've already spoken about Jeffrey Schlupp.
Yeah, I'll leave King Jeff out. He's had enough encomiums for today. As you say, Ezra, I mean, I'm still getting over the fact that we've been saying it wrong for so long. As Mike Scott of this parish encouraged us to say, apologies, Ebra, for getting your name wrong for 2 years. What a game from him. I mean, I was expressing my concerns about whether he was yet back to being the player that he was a couple of weeks ago when I was last on the show. Well, I mean, he's as good, if not better, than he has been in a Palace shirt in this game. The commentator on the highlights on the Palace TV said at one point that he was playing like Dennis Bergkamp, which is praise indeed. The only other thing, I mean, there's nothing more you can say, really. It was an absolutely superlative performance. According to WhoScored.com, he was the second best player on the pitch after the Aston Villa goalkeeper, which I find curious. But the other thing I just wanted to say was what a pleasure it was to see Elise come on for a bit as well. And yeah, this was a really stunningly great, enjoyable performance. And with every sign that Elise is going to be back in this team as well, we've got a really exciting season to look forward to.
Absolutely agree with that, and that's a great summary. And I did talk about Doucouré a bit earlier on, but I will just to reinforce that point. When you look at a player who's playing his third professional game for Palace, and you know, coming with a fairly big reputation, and it was something that he was linked with us for a fair while, and clearly somebody that we'd done our homework on. But even then, even knowing what we kind of knew about him when he joined, and how much the manager and coaching staff and director of football and all that had really wanted to get him in, he's still so much more of a better player than I thought he would be. I cannot believe we've got this guy. And, you know, my prediction is sadly that we will really have to work to hold on to him. When you look at a team like, and I hate to say it, but you look like a team like Chelsea, who are going to have to look to replace Kante soon, you know, he's the exact same player with probably even more ability, you know, sorry, not ability, more potential to get even better than that. You know, he is absolutely unflappable on the ball. You know, his anticipation is probably the best I've seen in a central midfield player. He just seems to be in that right place. He seems to get a foot in, and he's not even fully up to the pace of the league yet. He is an incredible footballer. And I cannot wait to see him get even better in a Palace shirt. I think he stays fit all season. We've got a really big chance of doing great things. I just have to pause because the cat's being really cute and he's blinking at me. Hi. Hi, Kitty. Hi, Wesley.
You're doing well there, Hambo. That is a sign of affection from a cat. They blink at you to tell you they trust you.
Yeah. He's sort of lying sideways, blinking at me. Anyway, so Doucouré, fantastic player. Can't wait to see more. We'll have to leave the review of the game there. There was obviously a lot more to talk about. You could sit there. I mean, the extended highlights on the Palace site are 17 minutes long. That's how good it was, you know. So, but I want to touch on a few of the comments. A lot of these I'll just be reading because they're just people expressing their feelings, and you know, none more so than Sam, who says, I'm struggling to remember a game I've enjoyed watching more, even on a completely legal dodgy stream, which we'll never endorse, obviously. I've never seen such a confident Palace side. I'm sure Connor read it. Let me try that again. I've never seen such a confident Palace side. The controlled possession once we're ahead is something that Vieira has built so much good. Ty's first time cross, Wilf Eze, .. Sam eulogising about a wonderful performance there, and by far not alone. Dazed Pinhead said, I can't remember the last time I left Selhurst Park feeling so happy and elated. A brilliant display, which is, again, you know, echoed in so many comments. We can't get to them all, I'm so sorry, but we'll get to as many as we can, and I'll give some nods to some other people as well. Basically, on the subject I was just talking about, Andy Hode, our favourite Twitter handle of Andy the Twat 1992, says how quickly Doucouré looks to have settled into life in the Premier League. Very impressed. I think you can see I am as well, Andy. I say Eze is a vibe. That's okay. I say Eze is a vibe. I said, how does Gerrard spin that game as an unlucky loss? It wasn't as laughable as Lampard from the FA Cup, but it's not far off. They had chances too, but hardly ever the better team. I think we've addressed that already, but completely agree there. It's just bizarre. So I'm going to ask this question, and whoever speaks first can answer it. It's from Pethos, who says, what's wrong with Gyro? Hodgson didn't fancy him, Vieira neither. Two keepers on the bench and still no Gyro.
Yeah, don't all rush at once. My God. I mean, I wish I could answer that. I sympathise with the reason why you're asking it, Pethos, because at the very least, you'd have thought he merits a place on the bench. I think I can understand that, you know, if Vieira doesn't fancy him as well, he's the one he's accountable for the results. He's got to pick the players who he thinks he can trust to do a job. And, you know, presumably he isn't picking Gyro for that reason. He has previously praised Gyro for the work that he's done with the younger players. So, you know, it's clearly not an attitudinal thing. But, you know, very sadly, I do think that probably, you know, the time has come for Gyro to move on. And, you know, I hope that, you know, he gets the success he deserves at another club, because I've enjoyed the, you know, most of the times. I didn't enjoy the time he didn't realise he needed to jump in the when he was playing as a part of the back four under Frank de Boer. But other than that, I think he's had some good times for us. You know, just not ever fulfilled his potential, sadly. But yeah, I can't get it. I just don't understand.
I think, again, though, it's that thing about just because he's not kind of fitting into what we're doing at the moment, doesn't mean that he's not considered good enough. Like, he's just not fitting into what we're doing at the moment. And so, yeah, it probably is time for him to kind of move on and go somewhere where he can fit in, and so that he has the opportunity to fulfill his potential. But it's probably not they don't think he's a good player. It's just that, like, who are you taking out to fit him into what we're trying to do at the moment, thinking that he would do a better job? I'm not sure I would.
No, it's tough. I'll be honest. I think that, I mean, there has to be something in there. He's had lots of praise for his attitude in training and the way he talks with the younger players. But, you know, there has to be something there. There has to be something that that coaching staff and manager are seeing that just means that they don't have that trust in him. And, you know, in the Premier League, we have a very large bench has been observed, and he doesn't get near it half the time. So, that's probably not quite true half the time, but you know what I mean? He's very rarely that he comes off the bench. He's very much a squad player, and somebody we might use in one or two positions in an emergency, but he has completely drifted off the radar for someone I thought would be, you know, a fixture in that midfield. And you think about the attributes he has and what we've seen, you know, and when he's been, and he's had a run of games, you think, actually, he could play in there. He could be alongside Doucouré and Eze in the midfield. He could play, if Doucouré's out, he could play in that position. Probably, obviously, nowhere near as good. But you know what I mean? He has the attributes there. He can tackle, he can pass, he can run. He's deceptively quick. But there must be some reason that he's not trusted. And it does feel odd, because you just forget. You forget that he's there. And I suppose, you know, we just don't get to see enough of him play football to be able to fully judge what those deficiencies are. And you know, maybe someone can get in touch and who's watched him a bit closer than we have and can pick out those reasons that he doesn't play and you know, where does he lack and what is it about his approach to football in the Premier League that don't really combine? Because it's hard to know. So it's a really good question, and I don't think we know fully what the answer is. But thanks for that, Pethos. So last couple now before we wrap up the show. So Martin Davey said, I thought we played really well, but Elise needs more game time. And following on from that, Daniel Babington Brown said, fast forward a month, wouldn't it be nice to have Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Elise on the right to complement Mitchell and Zaha on the left? And I sort of hinted back at this, hinted forward to this probably earlier on in the show, where I sort of compared that side, the Mitchell and Zaha side to the right with Ward and Ayew, and I do feel that if you think about Elise is definitely an upgrade on Ayew, and I think he would be playing if it wasn't for the injury pre-season. Just got to get back up to full fitness, and I think, you know, Jordan's got a real fight on his hand to keep that place other than in games where we really need a kind of more defensive player on that side, because obviously Ayew probably starts in those positions. But, you know, if Wan-Bissaka was to re-sign, and I think, you know, from by all accounts, it's something that, you know, we would be interested in if it could happen, for the right value, for the right contract. It's very, very complex and difficult deal to do. It could happen. You know, Man United are prepared to get rid. He's not necessarily fancied there. His form has dropped. You know, we are an option, but I think it's a very difficult thing to do in a way that would work for us. You know, people need to remember we've worked really hard to get those wages down. And what you don't do is then go and bring one player in who changes everything, and everybody else then looks and thinks, oh, tell you what, why am I earning 40 grand a week less than that guy? You know, so you do have to bear that in mind. So tough one. And finally, Tony King, and Chris, I'm sure you'll agree with this based on your comments earlier, saying no more Eze is getting back to his best chat. He's playing better now than he ever has. And I thought when I read that, I thought, you know, strong words, but actually that performance is certainly the best we've seen from him in a long, long time. But really growing into that central role as well. Because if you think his best performances for us previously were, you know, playing out on the left and drifting inside and, you know, running past people really easily. But it's just the strength he had in the Villa game. The couple of times just shrugging off challenges and, you know, the quick feet. It was just wonderful to see. So we're very much in agreement with you there, Tony. So I think I better wrap it up there. Thank you so much, first of all, to Cara, Chris, and also for Mikey producing the show today. Thank you for listening, and everybody who got in touch. I know didn't get to everybody's messages. There's a particularly really good email from Jerry. Nice points made, eulogising further about Palace's performance, but unfortunately didn't get to that. But thanks for that, Jerry, in particular. And thanks to everyone else who got in touch. It does help us put this show together every week. Makes my life putting the document together much, much easier. So it's appreciated. You've got the preview team back with you in midweek, of course. They'll be looking back at Tuesday night's game against Oxford in the Cup, and then looking ahead to a tricky trip to Manchester City. Done well recently against them, but going to be a tough ask. They had a setback today as well, which will probably make them very, very keen to bounce back. But we'll be back to review that game soon. Well, probably the day after. So until then, thanks very much. Come on, you Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.